Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Eloise Sheehan, Jenny Bill, and every so often some delightful guests from the cosmos.
Be kind. Resonance Rewind.
The joys of the girl from Ipanema, the joys of Vasquez Rocks, and specifically reverting to all primal instincts, it's time for another edition of Resonance Rewind with an extra special guest because we're focusing on the Airwolf episode, The Horn of Plenty. And that extra special guest, of course, is the awesomely talented, the one and only quintessential Caitlin O'Shaughnessy herself. It's Jean Brew Scott. How are you, Jean?
Hello, Alex. I'm great. Thank you so much.
It has to be said, Jean, that you have effectively made the day of two of our fellow Resonance Rewinders today. Jessica sadly is a bit poorly, but Jenny Bill in Norway, I think you're very excited to actually meet the legendary actress who portrayed Caitlin O'Shaughnessy. Is that not right, Jenny Bill?
I am very pleased to meet you. Yes, I
am. Pleased to meet you, Jenny.
And we also have, from his usual base in Wales, the awesomely talented writer extraordinaire, Robin Pierce. How are you, Robin?
Hello. How are you?
Robin, it's over to your good self to actually talk us through the initial brief précis of The Horn of Plenty. It's a season 3, episode 1 episode of Airwolf, of course, written and directed by Sutton Rowley. And indeed, that's what we're focusing on today. So over to you, Robin. What's it all about?
Well, okay. Airwolf started its life in 1984. It was a super secret attack helicopter, the likes of which nobody'd ever seen before. One of the big differences about Airwolf from any other action series of the time was that it addressed current Reagan-esque issues. For example, Airwolf was stolen in the pilot episode by the Libyans and was over in Gaddafi's summer palace and had to be liberated by an ex-Vietnam pilot who then held the helicopter for ransom, wanting the government to find his brother who was still missing in action in Vietnam. Very hot topics at the time. So in return for the CIA, the firm, looking for his brother, Stringfellow Hawk, played by John Michael Vincent, along with his mechanic helicopter charter owning buddy Dominic Santini and ex-cop Caitlin O'Shaughnessy, who joined from the second episode on, would basically take care of the world's terrorists. But in this episode, it's an atypical episode, which is actually quite disturbing. And it wasn't shown in the original run here in the UK, primarily because I believe of it opened up with a suicide. It's a brainwashing plot. Stringfellow Hawk is brainwashed by a tycoon I can only describe as Trump-esque.
Well, he is surely. I mean, Robin, it's, you know, we clearly have, you know, Donald's John Trump and then John Bradford Horn. John Bradford Horn,
indeed.
Donald John Trump. It's the same, well, surely.
Trump-esque is a word that I made up, Alex. It's like grotesque, only orange, okay? And basically, Horn, the evil billionaire who has a daughter who is manipulative in every way in her own right, Ivanka Trump, basically try to get Airwolf to their clutches. They convince, by brainwashing, Hawk to betray just about everybody. And it's left to Santini and Caitlin to try and save the day with the attack helicopter.
Which
it should be
does.
Noted that this is the first of two episodes where the character of Horn appeared. He would later appear again, played by a different actor. This time round, it's Richard Lynch who plays the role. I think he appeared as a bad guy in just about every 80s series. I mean, it wasn't a proper series until Richard Lynch had turned up to menace them.
Well, it certainly opens that up. Well, let's turn to Jenny in this particular instance. And Jenny, you actually had a look at this through a bizarre system, because unlike many of us who actually have the official DVD sort of collection of Airwolf episodes, etc., you were unable to access the whole process online, so you had to watch it through what was best described as a Heath Robinson approach, I believe, which was interesting.
We are nothing but creative on this show. I swear to you, we are nothing but creative. to explain to Jean what happened, Jenny couldn't get hold of the episode anywhere. I have the DVDs.
I don't have a DVD.
So though. I put the DVD on my player here in Wales, set up my tablet with a camera facing the front, opened up a live link, and streamed it on that camera so that Jenny could watch it in Norway.
See, Dominic Santini would have been proud of us, Gene. Would have been proud of us, absolutely. Anyway,
I think MacGyver would have been proud of us.
having allowed for that, Jenny, what did you make of this particular episode?
I actually don't think it's the best episode of the whole series of Airwolf. It is a program that I used to really like, because when I was a really little girl, I did have the hots for Jan Michael Vincent, and so I was actually quite happy to see him in a kind of a role where he wasn't playing a pretty boy and he actually got to play something a little bit more meaty. But I do actually really enjoy it, and it's kind of typical of that era when you had the car kit in the other thing. I'm not going to mention.
We didn't talk about Glenn Larson's Knight Rider. That's a different line entirely. It's another show, another time.
Name, where we had these sort of super automobiles or whatever. But yes, I didn't think it was the best, although a good female role in there who saves the day. I really thoroughly enjoyed it, despite the fact that the picture was fine, but the sound was really, really distorted. The kissing, there was too much kissing. There was well OTT kissing going on in that episode. Well, I thought it meant to be for families.
It's interesting, of course, because there are a number of wonderful classic lines that we actually get there. I mean, right from the very start, Gene, your character of Caitlin, you're on your back underneath a helicopter, which Dominic is actually sort of fixing at the top, obviously played by Ernest Borgnine. Then, of course, you've got the whole notion of the delivery of the package, which contains a videotape. Remember those? A videotape, a wondrous thing. And of course, the guy who actually was playing the delivery courier presumably wanted to build his part, because he actually walks off with the package. So you have to say, hey, what about my package? Amazing.
Sutton wrote that in.
I mean, this was the first, obviously, of the third season. So obviously your characters are established now, you're well into interplay, but Donald P. Belisario, of course, had stepped aside from the series. And in fact, the production levels were being handled by somebody else, I believe. Was there a sense that actually it was a new start for the series? Was it a case of working through that process, or was it just a case of, well, it's another day?
No. It was a process. Bernie Kowalski and his team came in. They kept quite a few of the same people, but we also got some new producers on it. And we had some directives from what we called the tower, or at that time, the suits. And they said,
The firm.
They wanted more action. They wanted more Caitlin. Caitlin was a draw for both families and their number one target, which were 14-year-old boys. Mm. And so Sutton wrote this episode for me to be able to save Hawk. And also to play on the idea of I think Caitlin's growing fondness for Hawk. So that's also evidenced in this episode. And Sutton is, you know, he's been called a genius and just, he does a lot of action and he always spent a lot of money. I know that was a big concern every night we were shooting. But he did some really, you know, some nice, at that time, kind of spectacular television. And The Suicide at the Top, you know, again, Universal was struggling a lot with guns and what's on television and who gets shot and what we see. Both Magnum PI, which was a Belisario show, and then Airwolf, we didn't shy away from the realities of what happens when people get shot, so quite as much as like perhaps maybe A-Team or some of those, yeah.
Well, so, I mean, certainly the Ludovico technique, those fans of Clockwork Orange would have actually sort of appreciated Jan Michael Vincent, and indeed, obviously, the unfortunate chap at the top of the programme, obviously having to work through that brainwashing, which again brings us back to the Trump scenario. But, you know, he's gone now, so, you know, let's step away from that. In terms of Vasquez Rocks, of course, I mean, that for Star Trek fans is a legend, but it appears it's iconographic in so many ways. Was that the first time you'd been to Vasquez Rocks, or were you familiar with it before? Or was it a case of, yep, this is good by night or by day?
We shot out there a lot. I know there's a lot of tallies in fandom talking about when and how and where we shot at Vasquez Rocks, but we shot out in that area, not necessarily on the rocks, all the time. So that was someplace that we were familiar with going. You know, I'd get up at 5 in the morning and drive on out there. It's north of Los Angeles on a smaller road, a two-lane high, quote-unquote highway. And so you have to get out there. It's not easy to get there. And then when we got there, of course, they had everything all set up for us. And we had the makeup wagons and the motorhomes and all that kind of business. And this particular show, because it had so much armory and military and extras and all of that, it was quite an accomplishment.
There were some lovely quotes that I was sort of noting from the point of view of Dominic's. What the hell is so bad about being over 40? Well, I wouldn't know, because obviously 80 is the new 40 now. So we just work on that premise, you know, look on that side of things. But there is this sort of sense that with Catherine Hicklin's character, of course, as Angelica, I mean, clearly she had some interesting connections with Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds and others. I think there are in-law relationships there. Did you have much to do with her on set, or was it just a case of, no, I'm going to go in character and I'm already suspicious of your character right from the off?
No, I'm not that method. I know when I step into the world that I'm Caitlin, but on set she was wonderful. She's delightful. She's beautiful. So yeah, we had some interactions, of course, you know, at the craft services table or perhaps at lunches and things like that. She fell pretty hard for Hawk. Both on and off set.
24 hours, basically. 24 hours, and they're almost inseparable. In tears. It's astounding.
Yes. That was happening. It was quite an interesting shoot, especially when we were on the lot, because that is also where Knight Rider was shooting. And David Hasselhoff visited the set one day. So, yeah, it was quite an interesting shoot.
Robin, over to your good self, sir, because I mean, I could actually cite the classic line with, of course, the wonderful Alex Cord, who's still with us, and Dominic, where Alex actually comes out with the line, "You can fly, Airwolf? What?" Yes,
yeah,
of course.
This is where I was going to go. This one seems to broaden the character of Caitlin quite a bit, because she was introduced at the beginning of season 2 in an episode called Sweet Britches, where she was, you know, a cop piloting a helicopter, and she got in over her head with you know, now was it Lance LeGault who was with you in that episode?
Yes.
And
wonderful actor. I worked with him a number of times. and on other shows too. I love
Glenn. Of course, both he and Richard Lynch pursued relentlessly the A-team, didn't they? Anyway.
Why?
They dropped Caitlin then for an episode, and she came back looking for Hawk. And there was always a will they, won't they. It was like an undercurrent. But this is the first episode, I think, where I was aware that perhaps they were going to another level, because Caitlin is more open about the way she feels for Hawk. And of course, it's the first time that they let on to Archangel, their secret boss, that she is full. Not only does she know where the lady is hidden in a secret volcano, but also that she can fly the aircraft. Did you feel that was, you know, being built up too steadily, or did you think, well, it's about time we did this, or was it too much too soon, do you think?
No, I was intended to fly Airwolf from the beginning. So coming into the show, I was going to be integrated into that. And so I think they had some episodes prior to that where I was taught how to fly Airwolf. And it was relayed that I could fly anything, actually.
What about the romance aspect of it? Were you always going to have a romance? Were they building up to something like that?
No, they wanted to continue to have both Hawk and Kate have their own romances, and then episodes where we had to save one another. But they did want that tension there. You know, they wrote that into quite a few shows. Actually, we had a kiss and a couple kisses, and in fact, in this episode, there was an almost kiss Hawk.
You had nearly killed him, Kate. Obviously, Gene, from a point of view, the character of Kate had nearly done
for. Did you actually perform that kick to the chest? Because that was absolutely savage.
I would love to say that I did, but that was one of my wonderful stunt women. I had three, and unfortunately, I don't have all of their names at the tip of my tongue. I think Deborah did that one.
As soon as I saw it, I thought, oh my goodness, his ribs are going to be sticking out of his back.
Yes, it was a great kick, a great kick. Yeah, he shouldn't have been able to move very well when he came out of that.
If at all.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, I can't help but say that Archangel has to be just about the worst secret agent on the planet. He's even more publicly overt than James Bond, because he dresses all in white. He's got a big white limo. He works for the firm, which, you know, is another name for the CIA, with a license plate, Firm One.
But subtlety, Robin. I mean, again, looking from that, love the line from, of course, Alex Cord's Archangel character. Reported side effects include radical drops in temperature and convulsions, and in some cases, and a third of the tests, death. I mean, it's almost as though they're testing the vaccine, isn't it, really? But never mind. Only kidding. The vaccine's perfectly safe. It's not like the film from that point of view. But it was quite an interesting sort of aspect that we got there in terms of something which, I mean, my line for this one, Gene, is that it also came about at a time where shows were being kind of reduced. I mean, the whole notion of an hour show used to be in the States about 50 minutes plus commercials. This was one which comes at about 45, 46 minutes. And it did seem to be a very sharp ending to the actual piece. You know, it was almost as though they packed in so much that suddenly, woof, where are we going to go from here? Was there a sense that actually it could have done with more time to breathe, maybe even a two-parter?
I'm not sure if they thought about that as a two-parter, and the ending was meant to be obviously left open for Horn to come back and Angelica to come back and all of that. And most of the episodes, I thought we were all coming in at about 45 minutes so that they could put commercials in, of course. They could, you know, pay for the show.
Yeah, always important. Jenny, thoughts and questions from yourself?
Questions? I don't know if I have any questions. I'm not sure if I even have any thoughts.
In which case, let's move back to Robin then. Off you go.
Robin. Yes, I'm quite happy just listening.
How much training did you have to appear that confident in the Airwolf cockpit? Because, you know, I mean, we'd seen you fly something like, now it wasn't a Jet Ranger, it was smaller than that in Sweet Britches. And, you know, for all the world, you appear to be a helicopter pilot. So how much training did you have?
Well, I mean, she was a helicopter pilot as a police officer. And then in the episode where they trained me, Dom and Hawk were in the helicopter with me, and I flew her. And they did say a number of times that I was trained on numerous helicopters, airplanes. I was a computer expert.
What about you as an actress to convey that on screen, that convincingly?
Oh, Dom and I both did ground training. So we learned about the helicopter, and we took those classes. Both of us also flew Santini Air with Davy Jones. So as an actress, certainly I was nervous. I would never have attempted to fly a helicopter myself, but I had plenty of hands-on in the cockpit so that I wasn't going to hurt anyone if I was in a live helicopter. And a lot of the shots that we did were what they called poor man's process, which means they kind of got us up high in the helicopter with the rotors going, yeah. And we were live. So the camera crew's very close there because they're shooting up into the cockpit. And so they did appreciate the fact that does, especially Ernie and I took the time to learn about the helicopter and what we were doing and what we should not absolutely touch.
Gene, you know that
like the chain guns, for example.
What did she
like
say?
The chain guns.
Yes, and what chain guns? Well.
I was just going to say, Gene, that I've gone on record for years now, over the years that we've worked together and known each other, that we should really bring back Caitlin O'Shaughnessy as the Archangel character. You should actually have your own white suit. You should be running the firm. That should be the sequel from that point of view, because the fourth season, obviously, Barry Van Dyke didn't really sort of carry the whole system. It just sort of, it lost it after that side of things there, which is a great shame, because I think there's so much potential in terms of how the thing could be developed and evolved. Quick question in terms of something I heard Ernest Borgnine provide an interview a few years ago, in which he said that he was amazed at how quickly Jan Michael Vincent could actually effectively learn the lines. He almost had a photographic memory. Did you see any evidence that was the case, that he actually literally could just look at a script and pretty much he was set to go?
Well, somewhat. He carried his script, so we know that, you know, he was looking at it while we were on set, and if that was the moment of memorization or not, I'm not certain. He was also a great, he's a wonderful actor, and so even if the line wasn't perfect, the intent was always right on, and so he was able to, you know, jump into a scene very quickly, assume the emotional level of the scene and act through it.
Well, exactly so. And the girl from Ipanema, I mean, that there's quite a long sequence in which that's, and it's quite clearly the girl from Ipanema. It's not a kind of stock footage or stock sort of sound that's actually there. It could be the boy from Ipanema, I suppose. You could gender non-specific, etc. I mean, again, that added to the episode. I did get a sense that it was almost a cinematic feel in ways that kind of, there was a lot to pack in, but actually what was done really well.
Yeah, Sutton really did want to make it more like a film. And in fact, a lot of what he shot, we knew we were also going to do a premiere of that particular episode on the big screen in Hollywood. So there was also quite a lovely event in a private theater with a large audience on the big screen. And it does play, it plays really well on a big screen. I'm sorry you had to see it secondhand and across the airwaves.
Yeah. It's fair to say that Jenny's viewing was not the finest of this. I mean,
Yeah, it was meant to be much more cinematic than other episodes that we had done.
Robin, any thoughts of your good self?
Yeah, it's interesting what you just said about it being cinematic, because I've always thought that that was hugely cinematic. And from seasons one all the way to season three, they always had a cinematic feel. It was always big action, big vistas. You know, it was all dramatic with not a wasted second. You would see the aircraft take off, then go soaring over the canyons. And, you know, it was always so cinematic. But there was never a drop-off in production values, because I felt that the season three episodes, and one might think that the idea had got a little bit stale by then, but there were so many good episodes. I remember there was one where Hawk is leading some paraplegic athletes up a mountain and they're being hunted and he himself becomes injured. I remember another one with like a savant, a boy genius who also happens to have Down syndrome. I mean, there were so many really well done, really sensitive kind of, I mean, we never saw this on the A-Team or Knight Rider or Magnum. It was always Airwolf. And from Airwolf's sort of like, you know, strip line of a Vietnam vet stealing a helicopter going on secret missions, one would think that that would be the least likely to have that level of sensitivity in storytelling. What do you think?
Well, I absolutely agree. And a lot of that's due to Bernie Kowalski. Bernie wanted to go more in that direction. He wanted more character development. And he wanted us in the world, not always in the sort of spy world or like that. I think also the stories that you've touched on, it allowed us to interact with each other in a different way, because we were interacting with those characters. And so I think that the audience sort of came to us even more with that. Those that loved the lady and wanted to see the lady got enough of her. You know, they got to see her in all of the episodes, but those who wanted more character development got that in the third season especially.
And Caitlin, you mentioned that this will probably be going out very shortly on, as well as the Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio sites, etc. Be available, I think, for fans in the Airwolf community. Is there still a keen Airwolf fandom that's actually around? I mean, doubtless, if there isn't, there should be.
Absolutely, there is. There are a number of websites with anywhere from 2,500 to close to 6,000 fans. Who are quite active. I'm surprised. I respond on both of those. I enjoy interacting with the fans and talking to them, and they bring up some very interesting questions. It's not always all the same. And then there's quite a large fan fiction site. I think there's two different ones, and surprisingly enough, there are three female fans who write quite a bit of fan fiction. And for me, it's very exciting, because a lot of times they feature Kate, and they feature Kate and Archangel, Kate and Hawk. And that's always a big question. You know, if we had gone on to season four, what would have happened? Alex Corden and I had the best friendship. We were dear, dear friends. We are dear friends. And he bought a house in my neighborhood, and we were, you know, frequent visitors for dinner at each other's houses. And so some of that started to come through in season three as well, because I had such a fondness for him. And I think also he for me. And so that's a lot of fun. And looking back as a retired actress, it's really nice to have that legacy. And as you were saying, you know, to know that, I'm sorry, this is, to have that cinematic legacy and the idea that we really were real people. We weren't caricatures out there fighting the good fight.
Well, very much so.
You're a retired actress. Can I just ask you this? If somebody came up to you and said, "Gene, we're doing Airwolf the Next Generation, and we're going to take you up on your idea. You now run the firm, and you send this new crew on their missions." I mean, it could be Alex Lefchuk as Dominic Santini. You know, how quickly would you go for that? How quickly would you like to revisit the world of Airwolf?
In a hot second.
I think it would be Hawk.
Oh, you're one of those people. I would love to do that.
I would fly the helicopter.
Explore it. And, you know, Alex, we could bring Alex into this as well, you know.
Yeah.
The first episode, he could be finishing up my transfer of power.
Yeah.
Yes.
In fact, I would say it's one of my sort of definite sort of ambitions. We should get Alex Cord with Eugene whilst he's still around. I know we've sort of passed on best wishes in various ways, but he's still functioning with that, because ultimately that's the sort of the ultimate air crew for of course Airwolf, etc. With yourself and Dominic.
I would like to bring in who's the fellow in the Bourne identity?
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. Everybody throws out names for who might fly, not to replace Stringfellow, but to be a new pilot. I wouldn't mind having Matt Damon on that crew. And Jenny's saying yes, she wants that too.
Thumbs up from that. Gene, we're at the stage where we normally actually give a score out of 10 for the particular episode we've been reviewing, which of course has been The Horn of Plenty. It's been fantastic just getting a general flavour of some of the awesomeness that's actually there. I mean, I do like, again, keeping the sort of Trumpesque themes going. The line in which Trump talks about being an individual who's actually gone head to head with the great Wall Street tycoons, with politicians and so on. I mean, it's spooky how sort of, you know, within 35 years, actually, you had a president of the United States who followed that routine. He's obviously been brainwashing people. But anyway, Robin, what's your score out of 10 for The Horn of Plenty?
There are several episodes of Airwolf that would get an instant 10 out of 10. This is an atypical one. I'm going to go 8 out of 10 for this one. I enjoyed it very much, but one of these days I would love to talk to you about Sweet Britches, which is a 10.
It is an outstanding episode, and I was very close to going for that, but I thought we'll go with this one today because it opens up a whole range of things. Jenny, what about yourself?
As I said, actually, can I just say that none of us have mentioned the amazing theme music, which I think is quite iconic and is a huge part of Airwolf is the amazing soundtrack and particularly the theme music. So I just wanted to get that in there. This is not one of my favourite. There's lots of other episodes that I remember that I like much more. So I think I'll give this one a 7.
Well, I'm going to go 9 because it would get a 10 if it had more Caitlin O'Shaughnessy in it, but that's by the by. It's a different line from that. Again, the way in which you actually just took out the unsuspecting security guard by literally luring him into the Airwolf thing, and then he's gone. It's literally one blow and he's gone completely. It's amazing. But Gene, from your own point of view, what mark out of 10 would you actually allocate to this particular episode?
Well, it is one of my favorites because Caitlin gets to save the day, and I appreciated that very much. And also, it furthers the relationship between String and Kate, and we actually see the affection that they have for one another. But I think probably I'm going to go with Robin with an 8. There were things that could have been better. And I don't know if it was because of the time that we weren't able to do what Sutton had in his imagination. But I think that there are some things even cinematically that we could have done better and really wowed people. And season three, we absolutely thought there was going to be a season four. We were not thinking for a minute that we weren't going to come back for a season four and continue developing those characters. And so eight, I'd give it an eight.
Well, I mean, the way you delivered the line, "I've got dibs on Angelica," you know, it's amazing. You know, could have opened up a whole new world on that system. It's great. It's been awesome inviting you to share with us, Jean, some wonderful memories about this particular episode. I know we're obviously midweek dry bets and doing various other bits and pieces. I take it you'll be back with us again before too long?
I hope so. I always love it. I look forward to it, Alex. Thank you.
Well, I think certainly the last time, obviously, yourself and Randy were over here within Lincoln, et cetera, a few years ago now, of course, maybe we should actually take that exploration into Wales and do a location report in Wales when systems get lifted. I mean, should we go with that?
I think so.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'll be your guide.
And one for Scotland, and then we'll come back to Lincoln.
Yeah.
There you go. That makes perfect sense.
Just pick me up on the way.
Yes. Jenny, many thanks indeed. Jenny Bill, Robin Pierce, and of course, Jean Bruce Scott, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And next week, of course, Jean, we're actually heading down the line of Logan's Run with an episode of Logan's Run TV series called The Collectors, which is next online. Incidentally, actually, just a final point. Is there any reason why Airwolf isn't available online outside the United States? So is it just a case of it's all due to do with the legalities, etc.? Because obviously we've got DVDs, but not available online, which is a sad loss, I think.
I don't understand all of that. So I wish it was available more places as well. A lot of the fans comment on that and you know, get the Blu-ray if they can.
Yep.
But yeah, we don't actually, it's on Peacock here in the United States and the quality is not great. It's good in a pinch if you're just jonesing for an episode.
This was the first thing because I'm staying in Norway because I came over here for a job. So I'm just in a rented apartment and I don't have all my own things from home with me. But this is the first thing that I haven't been able to, even if I have to pay, been able to find online. Just saying.
So we'll have to get that sorted out, actually. I mean, there's which we need to obviously sort out and address. For the moment, though, Robin Pierce, Jenny Bill, and Jean Bruce Scott, happy rewinding.